Okay, what do you want to do tonight?
The same thing we do every night, Pinky. Try to take over the world.
Welcome to another edition of the Sun Tranny Audio. Well, actually, this is kind of a special one since we are concentrating solely on Pro Wrestling Ohio, Kevin's bread and butter for the past 5 years now, I suppose. It's since they're in season 5, started over on the Torch, came over to Stunt Granny. We're going to keep this thing rolling with our good friend who came up for Resolution last year, Mr. Dan Keister. How you doing tonight, Dan?
Still basking in the glow of that Missouri victory over Kansas on Saturday, Kevin. Life's pretty good, and no complaints. Just to get that out there for anyone that cares about that kind of stuff.
Yeah, you know, I was trying to figure out why Kansas was ranked number 10 when they were playing Baylor today, and I guess I missed that whole loss to Missouri. That did the trick.
That did the trick. Marcus Denman took over. Scored the last 11 points of the game as a team and sent them back to Lawrence. They don't want to play us anymore. They're a bunch of crybabies because we're going to the SEC. So, hopefully we can beat them again in Lawrence and then really shut them up. So, yeah, I'm in good spirits.
good. Well, we are going to talk about Episode 9, and I'm sure I will include the link on the write-up here. But since Jeremy and I talked about Episode 8 in a previous audio, they started off the show with a big announcement that I had mentioned before now. But the big announcement was amazing Nate Mattson retiring from active roster duties at this time. I don't know. What were your thoughts on his work as a whole in Pro Wrestling Ohio, I suppose?
You know, Kevin, we talked about this a lot pre-resolution, I think, and certainly during the show. I mean, the whole Sons of Michigan thing is one of the things that I've enjoyed the most in watching the program. I think that even their interaction that they had. I've never been a huge fan of Ben Fruth, but their interaction with him was very funny and well done. And Mattson's just a great interview, and I think, you know, for the level that they're at, is a really good worker. And he and Boone had an excellent chemistry. I think it's a real loss to the promotion. And as I think you mentioned on your write-up, it'd be great if they could keep him around. I think he could manage, certainly, if he chose to do that. I don't know whether he'll want to make a lot of trips to just to manage. But, I really have thought he's kind of brought the whole package to PWO in a lot of different ways and kind of all up and down the card. You know, at times they've been treated extremely seriously as tag team champions or contending for that. And then, you know, at other times they've been a little lower on the card, but they've always really performed well. And I mean, he had a really good interaction with Boone. He's been gone before. They kind of had Boone out there on his own a lot last season at times, but, you know, he certainly adds a lot to the mix. So, yeah, it's unfortunate, but that's kind of part of these shows as you see people come and go and see new stars come in, I guess. But, yeah, I agreed with a lot of what you wrote.
Yeah, and I think he'd been wrestling for like 14 or years or something like that. I mean, it wasn't like he wasn't just starting out or anything like that. I mean, he'd been around on the indie circuit for a while and had wrestled some pretty solid names, and I wish I would have thought about this question a little bit more before I before I started this, but you know, he had been around, and he was actually on Man vs. Food once when they were up in Detroit.
Okay.
So, and it was kind of funny because of all the wrestlers that ended up being there, because they had some, it was something ridiculous, a 44-pound burger, and you could invite, like, a whole crew of people there to finish the thing. Oh, actually, no, it wasn't even, I should say, 44 pounds is way too light.
Oh, it was 44 ounces, maybe.
Huh?
44 ounces, maybe? That would be one person, though. I don't know. What would that be like?
No, it was like 100-some-odd pounds, I think.
Oh, my God.
It was ridiculous. Like, it was completely obnoxious. Like, that's why you could have, like, I think they had, like, 80 other people there, along with Adam Richman, the host. It was something crazy like that. It was a bunch of, you know, indie wrestlers and roller derby girls. And just some other just generally big guys, it seemed like. And they did not get that, did not get it finished. But the point, really, of the whole thing was that, you know, they had, like I said, 80-some-odd people there. And they showed him two or three times. So, I mean, it just showed you that even, you know, on a show like that, he kind of caught their eye.
That's
more
right,
than...
Yeah, he's, I mean...
More than normal.
Yeah, and certainly, you know, I think size-wise, it'd be tough for him maybe to get the big break that I'm sure he'd love to have had. But again, I mean, he does kind of command people's attention, and he's got a real good charisma about him. And, yeah, I've been a big fan. So, like I said, it's unfortunate. But and the thing that bothered me, honestly, was the sound on that was not good. It was kind of hard to hear part of what I guess was a legitimate legitimate retirement speech. I mean, it was done parts of it in a heelish way, but still.
It was a retirement speech better. Nonetheless.
Yeah, I mean, you'd like to hear it better than it came across on television. I know they're somewhat limited sometimes what they can get on their TV, but that was a little bit frustrating. Thought they had a pretty decent crowd relative to some of their TV crowds this week, so that was nice to see.
Yeah, well, that venue as a whole, and I think Jeremy and I mentioned it, the lighting was a lot better because, yeah, I think they started there in episode 8. This one was there. So, yeah, it was the same lighting. The crowd was really good and really vocal, which, you know, I mean, that crowd was probably less space, but, I mean, they probably had a crowd close to what they've gotten from Resolution there, at least, you know.
It looked like a nice crowd for sure. I wouldn't judge it, you know, that well. I'd say Resolution that I was at had more, but I could
okay.
But, and, you know, they had that staging area that Facade went off the top of, which was kind of cool, but a little bit contrived. Ben Boone was kind of walking around confused there for a minute, but I guess it was a good visual. The fans seemed to get into that.
That was the only, we're kind of sliding in here to what happened after Matson's announcement. Was Michael the Bomber Facade against Benjamin Boone, who, did get Mr. Matson as his manager, at least for this show. And, at the end of the match is what Dan's talking about here is because they're at a high school gym, they just had an entranceway, you know, they must have had a scaffold up on the front of it or something. So Facade went backstage after they were fighting outside the ring and basically a helo off of that little stage
fair,
there.
Yeah, I think that would be a fair description, from what I recall. And like I said, it was a cool visual. The crowd liked it. It's kind of a lot of. I mean, Facade's got some good personality. It's kind of cool the way he comes to the ring and makes the signs for the kids and stuff and all that. I think at times he's, and you mentioned in your review, I mean, I don't know if I'm stepping on your lines here, but there were a couple sloppy points in the match, and I don't know whose fault it was. I'm not expert enough to see it, but that just seems to me to come up more often than in Facade's matches than, say, in Boone's matches. So I don't know. I'm a bigger fan of Ben Boone, I guess, than Facade. I see why they promote Facade the way they do, because I think he does have a good personality and seems to get some, particularly some of the kids like him. But, you know, there's
right.
Those things seem to come up from time to time. And, I mean, this is not WrestleMania, so I don't mean to be too harsh, but that is what it is.
Yep. Yeah, no, and that's that was really the only downside to the match in general, honestly, because it really worked out pretty well, because after that cross, it ended up being a crossbody. I finally read my own review. Jason Gorey interfered not very long after that to snap Facade's neck over the top rope, and that allowed Boone to okay, I'm sorry. Mattson distracted the ref, and Gorey clocks Facade with the belt.
Yeah, I was going to say, I thought he hit him with the TV belt, which, again, Facade wants the TV title. Gorey has it, so why not involve that into the finish? I thought that was good, and they executed that well. It's hard to describe if you're not seeing it on TV, but it was just kind of like bang, bang, bang. I mean, there was no – the timing made sense of it. There wasn't, like, this really odd delay. I mean, it all looked the part, that it was a quick distraction of the ref. Gorey kind of came out of nowhere and caught Facade from behind, I believe. And the ending, other than if people don't like the non-clean finishes, I thought was good.
And it worked out because the week before there, Facade was talking about coming close but not being able to finish the deal, and I believe this might be his third crack at the TV title, if memory serves. So, I mean, I think it could work out pretty well if they just keep on running with that storyline.
Well, and that's the thing,
letting him finally attain it.
Yeah, and it's an overriding theme of PWO. I mean, they always, and what's so frustrating to me about WWE a lot, I thought it was cool this week. They said, okay, Shawn Michaels is going to be on the show next week. As you guys, I think, have said in your audios, and a lot of others mentioned as well, WWE kind of gets their stuff together around WrestleMania time, where they start promoting things a little bit more the way it should be promoted. But, I mean, okay, eventually they're going to have this TV title match, and there's been a slow build over several episodes as to why it's on the card. You've been anticipating it if you're following the promotion. There's an issue between the two. I mean, that's good booking. So the booking of this promotion is certainly, I think, very good, and one of the main reasons I watch it as much as I do.
Yep, I completely agree. Speaking of books, there is writing in those, and there is also, other parts of the show that we should probably get to. That was an awful segue that I had to somehow find my way out of.
No.
Cursed was the next up, doing a little promo about Gregory Iron.
Hell of a promo. I thought, and I know you gave it a good score, I thought it was a damn good promo.
Yeah, no, I liked that that Curse did a good job of kind of drawing their similarities between him and Gregory Iron, which was, one of the better things, honestly. Of that whole thing. It's just like, hey, we aren't really that different. It's just, you kind of end up with that good versus evil kind of a vibe to it.
Right, and who are you to get... I mean, again, they kind of know who they are. I mean, there's no reason not to bring up what happened with CM Punk and Gregory Iron. at the AIW show. And so he brings that up and is like, well, you know, I've had as much problems in life as you have, and you get all this love from CM Punk, and you're the internet hero, and all of this. Had that happened before he turned, it would even make more sense. But, you know, the whole time when he kind of fell in with Crimson and Gory, at first it was just kind of like, well, you know, why did he I guess was he buddies with Corey Winters, is that right, at one point, and then turned?
Yeah, well, what ended up happening, really, is that he was the first one to join up with Crimson at the Resolution.
Okay, I may be getting this backward then. Okay.
Yeah, Resolution 3, Crimson came out and carried him from the ring when him and, yeah, it was him and Corey Winters were tag team partners.
Yes.
But then it's, and I don't know what happened exactly, but at some point last year, it seemed like he bailed out for a decent chunk of time.
Okay.
You know, for reasons unknown. So
he's been in
they
the
ended up kind of filling in. Jason Gorey, to me, at least the way it seemed to me, is that he joined them after Cursed wasn't available.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, that does kind of make sense.
I could be wrong, but Gorey was getting at least the beginnings of a push because he hasn't been around for very long, at least in Pro Wrestling Ohio.
Okay.
So, you know, something, you know, you needed someone to fill in that storyline. I guess they felt like he was a leftover babyface that could
do it, yeah. Well, and
yeah,
again,
it could
it's
come
kind of
over.
This Crimson has this demonic or whatever, you know, ability to bring these people into his line of thinking, and it's kind of reminiscent of Kevin Sullivan back in Florida or something in the day. I mean, I think it's well done. And again, what I would say is, since I've been watching, there's always been this kind of unanswered question, well, why did Curse join up with Dead Wrestling Society? It's never really been addressed. He's never really spoken. And so here this guy comes out and speaks out of nowhere, and I thought really gave a strong, focused promo that, again, the only thing that doesn't make complete sense is the stuff with Gregory Iron happened well after he joined Dead Wrestling Society, but I still really like the promo.
It was really good, and I mean, I think you can still be bitter about it even if, you know, he wasn't... was already a heel there.
Right. Well, and again, it explains why they've been so vicious to his buddies, you know, to Hobo Joe and all that. So, yeah, it's good.
Well, next up was, just another shorty, too. Completely did not capitalize here. Sassy Steffi is back in Pro Wrestling Ohio, and she cut a little promo here. I don't know, good, bad, even. I guess you could kind of combine this with, you know, maybe your thoughts on Veda Scott's promo from the previous week.
Yeah, we had
week.
Kind of the disagreement on that the week before. Veda Scott gave a promo that to me was... I mean, it sounded like she was confused in it, but I felt like that was on purpose. Like, here she is frustrated and trying to make excuses for her loss, and it's kind of causing her not to think through all of her thoughts, even though she's supposed to be this genius. I also just love, just as an aside, the constant references to Veda Scott that Aaron McGuire will slip in throughout the episode, just kind of out of nowhere, but just... how wonderful she is. So that's always always entertaining. But, you know, I guess the thing, I thought the Sassy Steph promo was, I mean, I guess she came up with a catchphrase. I didn't particularly care for it. It didn't do a whole lot for me. But, you know, hey, they're you know, when you're going to watch this women's match on PWO, again, there's more of a reason for it. Veda Scott's trying to prove herself. Sassy Steph is, I guess, coming back to, I don't really, again, from her promo, I didn't quite understand what her purpose was other than to show that she's great. But there's more of a reason for this match than any women's match you'll see in WWE, except for the presumably Karma and Beth Phoenix thing they're building up at WrestleMania. I assume they're still building that up. But yeah, that's a very rare occasion in WWE. So, you know, hey, they're fairly new to this. Certainly, Veda Scott probably hasn't cut a lot of promos. I thought it was better than you did. Again, there's a reason that when you see it on TV, you're not going to be like, why is this on my TV? I really like that they're, you know, they're only using a minute of TV time to build a match that I assume will be on next episode or the episode after. So, overall, better doing it than not, certainly.
Cool enough. I think that is plenty of time.
Yeah, we've talked about that more than they've done the interviews, so that's
next up, again, something that kind of tied into last week, because Brian Bender took on Ben Fruth the previous week. Their tag team partners, Brian Castle with the other Brian, and Ben Fruth's partner is Corey Winters. Winters and Castle had the match last week. Return match this week. It's between Bender and Fruth. Is everything playing out okay on this little tit for tat for you?
Yeah, I think they're going out the right direction. I mean, Bender seems to be the guy that they may eventually move into title contention out of the four. Can't be sure about that. He had a really not completely dominant win over Fruth, but, you know, pretty convincing win. I mean, that finisher, kind of the...
he went with the Uranagi. He went with the old rock bottom.
He had a slam there. I mean, it was, you know, he put him right away. On that. One thing I'll mention again, I just have these little nitpicks that come to my mind, and maybe the people will hear it and correct it. I don't know. Joe Dombrowski is turning into Vince McMahon with his "he got him" every time it's a false finish, and then doesn't say "he got him" when it's an actual finish. I notice that more in the main event than in this match, but...
Gotcha.
Gosh, that's frustrating. If you're going to say "he's got him," occasionally it's okay to say it when it's actually the finish of the match. And I don't know if that's always been a problem with him, but for whatever reason this week in the episode, he seemed to say it a bunch of times, and it never was the actual finish. So that frustrated me a little bit. But
I completely did not notice that at
it
all.
It kind of ruins it for people to watch, too, so I probably shouldn't bring it up. So hopefully that'll get corrected, or maybe I'm misrepresenting. I don't know, but... This week he says he got him like four or five times.
I'd honestly have to go back and rewatch it to be able to tell you one way or the other on that one. I'd have to rewatch it. I'd also have to still have it on my DVR, which I do not. So
There you go. But, you know, Brian Castle walking around with the chair, slapping people's hands. He's got real comedic timing. We've talked about that before, and he continues to crack me up. When Bender tells him to sit in the chair and he sits backwards so he can slap the fans high fives, I mean, I really kick out of that kind of stuff. So
And then he offers Bender his lucky...
bandana, that's right.
Bandana at one point.
Yeah, which he did not want. So... Bender's kind of the serious guy, and I think you described it really well. It's not really a heel thing. He's just trying to show him, hey, man, if you're serious and take care of business, you can get further ahead in life. So didn't really notice Corey Winters at all in this match, which is fine. I mean, the good guys aren't supposed to interfere. So no complaints about it. I enjoyed it. And then, you know, Ben Fruth has to high-five Brian Castle after the match and take the hug and all that. So it's kind of clever. It's entertaining to me.
Yeah, and, you know, as far as I usually harp on things that are face-on-face and heel-on-heel, but they've actually kind of worked it so that it isn't so bad, because they're not trying to build it up like I hate you or anything like that. It really is all in that Brian Bender, hey, you know, it's a competition, we can be friendly with everyone afterwards, but, you know, we still got to do our work in the ring. So, you know, it's kind of nice to see that. Like, you don't need to have a beef to wrestle someone,
Kevin, what this does is invariably at some point they're going to have a face-on-face match where one of the faces turns. What a lot of people in the industry, the sport, the business, whatever you want to call it, Vince Russo and others particularly, don't understand is if every single time the two faces square off, one of them, you know, takes a screwdriver out and knocks the other guy out and just does all these vicious things to him, or a beer bottle or whatever you want to say, if the face-on-face matches, and particularly here not at the top of the card, people never behave consistent with their character, then you just can never do that. Because if you only do it to turn someone, it's just a terrible device to try and advance a storyline. So I like it from that perspective, too. And as you said, all these guys are consistent with their characters, and there's really nothing in it that bothers me at all. I think it's a good way to fill some TV time, and, the matches haven't been. And, you know, I've always kind of, and maybe again because Fruth was on the losing end this week and didn't do as much offense, but I've been critical of him sometimes in the past, and I thought he held up his end of this pretty well. So he's either improving or I'm mellowing or something. So that was
Yeah, no, I think that his character has taken a turn for the slightly better. It's still kind of hard to get too attached to him either way, just because, I mean, he is on the undercard and they give him less time. So, you know, it's just hard to invest in anybody like that. I don't care what promotion it is if they don't give you too much.
He's still got his WrestleRama trophy.
Yep.
You know, that's good. Things matter in PWO that happen almost any time, which I like. They don't forget much.
No, and speaking of something that may need to be forgotten, unfortunately, due to injuries, Johnny Gargano was the next segment up here, and he talked about sex appeal. Namely, Bobby Beverly and Bobby Shields, since Nikki Valentino seems to be taking an Edge coffee break from the promotion. At least that's what it seems.
He slipped his name in there too, though. He talked about all of them a little bit.
Yeah, yeah, but he hasn't been on TV quite as much.
Right.
Yeah, he talked about them attacking him and having the answers possibly to who the masked man was.
Right, and we've talked about this off air. Well, of course, if he's injured and they can't follow through with this, then they can't follow through with it. But it's probably time that they conclude that storyline. It's been about a year, I guess, since the masked man helped cost Gargano the title in that three-way match that Fontaine won. So, they probably want to get that moving, and they probably were moving in that direction. And you know more about Johnny Gargano's injury than I do. But, yeah, it'd be unfortunate if he couldn't take part in things coming up, and it sounds like that very well might be the case because, as you mentioned on your review, this was a really strong – and some of his interviews in the past, again, he hasn't always – he's kind of had that Sting lack of focus or something at times or gotten a little too goofy or whatever, but this was like a focused interview. And I didn't – sometimes I watch his interviews and I feel like, okay, this guy's trying to be a wrestler. He's trying to be in the moment, but he's really not. But that was like, no, here's this guy that's pissed, you know. And it really was one of the stronger interviews I've ever heard him do, in my opinion. The only thing is that, again, I get really nitpicky, but he like he said, I think mast instead of mask and rule instead of rue. And it was like, I don't know, I was like trying to figure out if there was a, I'm sure there was nothing to that, but I don't know. That was kind of unusual, but again, I'm being too That's really being nitpicky, so I don't know whether, why I even brought
yeah,
it up.
No, I think he's done a... This one stood out to me more than some of his other ones. Like, I think that for about the past year or so, and maybe
that's
it's
true.
Been since he started working in Dragon Gate more and more, like his promos seem to have gone out of goofy mode from about that point forward.
That's very true. He did some good promos, and we talked about this about Resolution. He did some really good promos at Resolution. I guess this whole season he hasn't done as many promos because he's not the focus of the company anymore. But when he has done promos, they've been good. So I'll back off that a little bit. But boy, when they were just featuring him as the Hulk Hogan, so to speak, of the promotion back in the day, some of his promos I thought were his weakest point then, and he's really come a long way. And I thought, and you know, I said that about his Resolution promo too, though, now that you mention it, that I thought it was like his strongest promo, and I'd have to go back and look at both to see which one was better, because that was damn good, and this was damn good also. So kudos to him, and as you said, hopefully he'll be able to wrestle soon and get up and going.
Yep. Well, but speaking of another injury, although Jeremy punched a little hole in the news for me, Flip Kendrick of Aeroform on Pro Wrestling Ohio's site was mentioned as someone who is now hurt.
Oh, dear.
Yes. Now, the part that Jeremy mentioned to me was the fact that the news was posted 2 weeks after, 2/3/12. So the news came well after they lost the tag team titles, even in TV land, which is much later than it happened in real life, to Crimson and Cursed, 2/3 of the Dead Wrestling Society.
Yeah,
here,
no,
what did you
ahead.
Think of the match itself? First,
yeah, overall, I thought the match was pretty strong. Again, you know, Aeroform is one of these more high flying teams, but they're good at it. Pretty good back and forth action. You know, I think that, again, Crimson is certainly the most protected guy in terms of offense and what defense he gives, but as he should be. I kind of thought they really, and I don't know how they could have gotten around this at the Resolution where he lost to Bane. I mean, you knew he was probably going to. I mean, they were building up Bane as this unbeatable guy, but I kind of felt like, I know they had the TV title, but I kind of felt like, you know, maybe if they're not going to put Crimson as the PWO champion, that this is a pretty good spot for these guys to be. So I know you were, and you could elaborate on your thoughts on this, but you were kind of upset to see him get the belts off of Aeroform so quickly. But I kind of think having the heels with the titles, which is happens a lot with those PWO tag team titles. I know Hobo Joe and Gregory Iron had a decent reign there, but and then having the baby faces trying to capture them, I don't think it's such a bad way to go. And, you know, to me, I have a thought of what this might set up, and you may or may not agree with it, but I was thinking watching this thing that here, you know, poor Gregory Iron's been getting abused and beaten up, and it looks like they're putting facade into the TV title thing. It makes perfect sense to me to have Jason Bane put the PWO title off to the side for a while and be like, you know, I'm going to help this guy Gregory Iron out, and we're going to go after these SOBs, and I think it could be a really good feud.
Yeah, you were about five words into that, and it dawned on me. I'm like, oh, I know where he's going.
Yeah.
And you know what? They have, I'm trying to remember if it's season one or season two. But in the past, I know that they have team together. That is Jason Bateman and Gregor Iron. Now, it wasn't like any type of a long-term thing, but, you know, seeing as
they'll
though...
They'll probably build off that, though. I mean, that's the way they do things, like we said.
Yeah. Considering that, that PWO has, writers that'll pay attention to what the hell happened in the past, I'm sure they'll make it, so...
But, yeah, as I was watching that, I thought this really sets up a feud I'd be interested in seeing. I mean, it's been well-developed, and you got the whole cursed, you know, interview about Iron earlier in the program, and you kind of combine two feuds into one thing. And, again, they promote their tag team division better than most, if not everybody else. So, I'm kind of excited about it. And, again, you know, you had, as you mentioned, you had Facade try to make the save for Flip, and you had Iron try to make the save, and he couldn't. I mean, Dead Wrestling Society is a good act, and they should be portrayed as strong. And then again, I don't remember exactly when he said this, but one of my favorite parts of the show was, again, when Aaron McGuire made the comment, thank God for Jason Gorey coming out and helping the Dead Wrestling Society, as opposed to the baby faces coming out and helping. It's kind of in the timing of it when he said it, but I was highly amused and entertained by that.
Yeah, no, I think I remember that, but I don't remember when exactly it occurred either.
And it was after they'd done some heinous stuff. I mean, it was like,
that's what I was wondering, if it maybe was part of the post-match beatdown.
I'm trying to recall, too. It was either at
Which
the finish or the post-match beatdown. I don't recall. That
yeah,
was what I was going to watch before.
Oh, and I was... Okay. Crimson and... Because we haven't mentioned this important part. Crimson and Cursed ended up capturing the tag team titles. And afterwards, Jason Gorey came out, and they attacked Aeroform. Gregory Iron comes out. He gets beat down for a little bit, and then Jason Bateman really makes the save.
He made a hell of a save. I mean, he portrays the badass quite well. So, as I emailed you right after I saw it, I said, I haven't read your review yet, but I thought this was a really entertaining hour of wrestling. I really enjoyed it and was kind of glad you put a fire under my butt to catch up and watch it so we could do this audio, because I thought it was well done. And again, you've got, I know you and Jeremy talked about this, but you have a really well-developed kind of mystery with Fontaine and Cross for the PWO title, with this Justin LaBar thing, where why would he give Fontaine a rematch? I mean, it doesn't make perfect sense, given he hasn't won every match that he's had. And then you have what I think, again, I know they've kind of pushed Aeroform off to the side. Maybe it was good timing if Kendrick actually got hurt. But, you have what I think is going to be a heck of a feud with Bane and Iron against Dead Wrestling Society. So, and then probably Facade and Gorey, I guess.
That one definitely seems to be in the works there.
So, yeah, I'd give it a thumbs up. I thought it was a good program. And, like I said, even the women's match, you know why it's coming. And I think that's a good, change of pace for the program. So I'm all for that, too. I mean, everything on that show, you know why it's there.
Yeah, no, it'll be nice to get that back in order.
And, Kevin, so, I know we may want to cut this off, and we may save this for another audio, because I know we want to keep it in a decent amount of time. But I was going to ask you, because I watch this program, and I see a lot of talented guys on it. Do you see some, and I know it's just up to these other promotions, but do you see the next Shima Zion that you think would be, I mean, you didn't know he was going to get picked out of all those guys when he went to TNA, but.
Nope. But did not have an inkling that he'd be the one.
I mean, they went with kind of one of their greener, younger, but definitely very athletic guys. And if you had to guess who would be next, would you wager a guess? Because I don't know that I'd have a great answer to that question. That's why I'm asking it.
Yeah, I would put my money on both of the two big guys, quote unquote, for sex appeal there, Bobby Shields and Bobby Beverly, because Shields has shown a lot of extra promise in the ring since he started going to Taz's dojo.
Okay.
And I don't know if he's still going there or not.
And Beverly's got the personality. I'm not to say he can't wrestle, but he's really good on the mic, and he carries himself like a star in a lot of ways.
Yeah, and I think that, especially for both of them, and I think this is kind of the most important part, is that both of them are pretty young.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think, you know, like, Bane has more of the size of what other, you know, what TNA and definitely the WWE are looking for. But, you know, I mean, he's as old as some of the guys that are, you know, long-term veterans on in the WWE.
Right.
You know, I mean, I think he's mid-30s or, you know, at least early 30s. So it's just kind of like, I don't know if anyone would decide to take a chance on him, or even Crimson's been around for a while, too.
And I mean, both those guys, I mean, Bane's come around wrestling. I think he's still not as polished as some of the guys in the ring. But, yeah, both those guys, you think, not that they're not deserving, but you think in some ways that the promotion builds their own as much as they do. You know, I think they want all those guys to do as well as they possibly can, but I think they think, well, there's a chance that these promotions may be more likely to invest in the younger guys. Whether that's right or wrong, I don't know. But yeah, I was kind of going to say the same thing.
Yep. So, yeah, I will leave it at that, because I don't know.
I guess to answer my own question, I really like Ben Boone, but I don't know if he's – the way he wrestles, I don't know if he's big enough. I mean, he wrestles more like a big guy, but he's kind of big WO. I don't know that he's as big as they'd want. I mean, if he'd have to change his style or what would happen for him to step up, because I really do. I think – and again, you know, if they could let Nate Mattson – help him with, you know, be a manager for him, that'd be a great, they're a great combination, but I doubt they'd want to do that, so I don't know.
No. Oh, you, Boone?
Yeah.
I don't know why I thought you said, who did I think you said there? Bender, for some reason.
Oh, no, I'd be more likely to buy stock in Ben Boone.
Gotcha. Yeah, no, I don't think that's a bad choice either. He was one that it didn't seem like it's gone anywhere since now, but he slimmed down a lot before season 4, and he still looks like he's in that state and not, you know, slimmed down in a bad way. He was just a little overweight and looked like he, you know, hit a little more cardio and got things a little more in state. And, yeah, he's another one. He's a big guy. And he definitely has size, so I mean, I guess I probably could have put him in that category, so that's a good pick.
Very good.
All righty, sir. Do you want the final say here?
Oh, I do the worst job of signing off. I'll just say I appreciate folks listening, and if anyone's interested, we could send you a DVD or a tape of that Missouri victory over Kansas once again, because everybody needs to pay attention to that, because they had a defeat coming at the mighty Mizzou Arena. So, very good. I'll let you sign off.
Thank you, grandkids. I hope you enjoyed another edition of the Stunt Granny Audio. This is Kevin. I'm grabbing a sippy time beer. I'm out, grandkids.
But does Granny really hate the wrestlers? Hardly.